Sucker Punch. A dirty fairy tale written and narrated by If Only You Would. Chapter 1, Meeting Simone Sloan and the Plungy, featuring the performer Throwaway Asphyxia. Simon Sloan Super Squash was a treat served to children by their mums for generations. Now, the first Simon Sloan had long since passed, nearly 50 years ago, due to a mysterious illness. However, he had been happily married to a lovely woman by the name of Doris, who raised young Simon Jr. into the business. It was at the tender age of 13 that Simon Jr., who was in fact Simon III because the family was quite odd, learned that his father was a bit of a seaman. He spent many months on the ocean, plundering the deep and discovering treasures and unique sea creatures along the way. How this became related to Super Squash in the first place was anyone's guess. But Simon III had quite a knack for the seafaring life. He soon married as well, and it was widely speculated that his wife, Jacinta, had been a former mermaid rescued during one of his adventures. A happy little girl soon followed. She was named Simone and was raised under the care of her mother, as Simon III was constantly away. She came to inherit her father's squash fortunes after Simon III's disappearance in the middle of the sparkling sea. Her mother was soon swallowed by the same murky waters, looking for her loved one. By the time she was orphaned, Simone had just turned 18 and found herself despondent. The family business she inherited, of which she had no family to speak of, was on the brink of bankruptcy. Simone sought a solution to her problem, so she went to her grandmother, Doris, to ask for advice. Doris had been expecting this conversation for years, and, over tea and biscuits in the study of the family mansion, she calmly smiled and spoke her wisdom.
"My dear Simone,"
Doris began, chewing on a mysterious bit of pink taffy.
"There is a secret recipe of Super Squash that may prove to be quite popular."
"Secret recipe?" Simone wondered, while Doris continued.
"Your father, Simon III, and my husband, Simon, were both obsessed with those damned sailboats. It was more important to them than, well, practically everything, in fact. But..."
She reached to the serving dish in front of her and popped another fleshy bit of taffy into her mouth deliberately, smacking her lips together while she spoke.
"It was on our wedding night that I came to understand why Super Squash was so special. And I think you're old enough to understand the secret."
Doris stood and crossed the room to a cabinet, fumbling with the key in a coat pocket before easing it into the dusty drawer door gently. With a twist, the lock clicked and the cabinet creaked open, Doris reaching in to remove a wide-mouthed jar. A soupy, viscous, dark-colored liquid sloshed about as Doris motioned to Simone, setting it on the desk beside her.
"Come here, child. You must learn about your heritage firsthand."
As Simone approached the desk, Doris lifted the lid of the jar, letting the sound give way to the tiny squeaks of the creatures inside. Simone couldn't believe her eyes. Floating in the gray-black liquid were tiny, pinkish-purplish, puffy lumps with cerulean blue spots. They had tiny eyes, dangly twisted legs which were bunched up, and a single slotted nostril directly between the sockets. Her ears were soon fooled as well, for the tiny puffy lumps were squeaking. Tiny, shrill, shivery trills were heard, muffled by the liquid. Doris picked one up and held it out towards Simone, squeezing its side firmly and causing the puffkin to giggle squirm.
"Don't touch, not yet,"
Doris warned. She continued her story.
"I pursued your grandfather for 10 years, writing him letters every day while he was away at sea. pleading with him to share more about his mysterious project. He had not revealed to me his penchant for, shall we say, more ribald behaviors. When he finally returned, he excitedly proposed and insisted we marry at once. Then, on our wedding night, he presented me with a very unique gift.
Doris reached out to Simone, placing the pumpkin on her open palm. Cool, slick, and gummy, the pink blob's appendages started to stretch out slowly, growing thinner and tangling. The lips of the slight suction felt elastic, and Simone bristled at the ticklish sensation creeping up her wrist, while Doris continued.
Your dear Grandpa Simon explained to me, much like I am to you now, that while he knew his drink spread smiles to children around the world, he would make sure the mums would be happy as well, to guarantee the sales of Super Squash. Grandpa Simon soon discovered a species of squid that had been missed by taxonomists and hid it from the public. He was then able to train them in the laboratory to do one thing.
By this time, the squid was at Simone's neck, having slowly and sweetly slinked up her arm over her elbow and crossed her shoulder.
Don't be alarmed, my dear,
Doris urged.
Just let the little Plungy do its thing.
Plungy! With a shriek, the pumpkin's legs retracted and dropped down Simone's shirt, rolling across the surface of her undergarments, down her ribs to her stomach, and bunched against the upper elastic of her stockings. One of the Plungy's legs tugged with elasticity, gripping softly, then snapping back to bunch over the surface of her panties. Simone gasped and blushed, while Doris sealed the jar, smiling softly to herself and sliding it back into the place in the cabinet. The gentle tentacles stretched out over the surface of Simone's pelvis, tightening like tiny rubber bands around the tops of her waist. Gentle squeaks and soft, warm suction from the creature's mouth began to saturate the fabric of her panties.
I know you'll find it hard to believe, but your grandfather and father had both planned to add these plungies to a new flavor of Super Squash, so that the mums who prepared it for their little ones got a little satisfaction in return.
Doris turned back to Simone, who had leaned her hands into the desk and was breathlessly stunned by the sensation she felt. Smiling a gentle smile, she said,
"The satisfaction you're beginning to feel, no doubt, is the same I felt during my wedding night. It's why I'll always love your grandfather, and why Super Squash cannot be destined to failure."
Doris crossed over to Simone, brushing her hair lovingly from her face and patting her shoulder. She whispered,
"My dear, the Plungy only has one purpose, to satisfy the squash maker. But, sweet Simone, we need to make sure it stays a secret, and to surprise Mums with a little jolly cheer."
The tentacles of the Plungy snapped Simone's underwear, sliding smooth, tense tentacles across her skin and flicking her engorged clit. The pumpkin twisted around onto the surface of a mound and tensely tightened its head against the swollen skin, stretching pliantly over the surface of her lips. As Simone squirmed about, Doris took a seat on the edge of the parlor chair.
"I know you're a bit indisposed at the moment, but I've already prepared the product launch and also perfected the recipe to make sure the Plungy can stay alive in the powdered drink. You see, as soon as the water is added, the creature springs to life, climbs into the palm of your hand, and ventures down there until the job is done."
The suction against her slit intensified. The Plungy's tiny tentacles grew with the intensifying heat and wetness. Then, instinctively, it inched its head against the opening, parting Simone's tender buds and squishily venturing inside the edge. A strange pulse began to quiver as the pumpkin's body expanded and contracted inside of her. And two tiny strands twisted around the glands, clenching and throbbing the crimson skin while sucking on the tip with the tiniest nub of its tentacle.
"It's quite hard to resist, isn't it? Of course, we made it look very unintimidating so that nobody would be scared of what it was trained to do. And miraculously, once the moment has completed, it is fully absorbed inside the womb, so there's nothing to clean up, no secrets to keep."
As Simone failed to hold her moans back, lost in the grips of the plungee, slowly and slickly stretching out her muscles from the inside with its perfect fit, Doris concluded her explanation.
But we still need to test it outside of the lab. So we've distributed 5 super squash packets all over the world to see if anyone will keep the secret. Since plungees can't speak, we also included a card inside the packet that explains what'll happen.
Doris chuckled, daydreaming about her first time, and slowly sipped her tea, hearing Simone slap the desk in ecstasy, watching her bend at the knees as the waves of her inevitable orgasm began to overwhelm her.
I can hear by the sound of your voice that we shouldn't have to worry about the plungee.
Unconcerned by the open display of her granddaughter's sexual delight, she popped another fleshy bit of taffy into her mouth, flicking her tongue to caress the inside of the plungee and stretching it forward like a piece of bubblegum. Chapter 2, Meeting Grady Goobles and Her Appetite, featuring the performer Lola Getz. It was 3 weeks' time before the first packet of squid-powered super squash was purchased, in a tiny village tucked away in a corner of the world long since forgotten. And, unfortunately for Simone Sloan, it was not purchased by a mum at all. Grady Goobles was in her early 20s and was not the typical squash drinker. In fact, she couldn't be sure why she picked up the mix in the first place. Maybe it was a fleeting bit of nostalgia, reminding her of the summers on the lake, picnics in the forest with family, school lunches and weekend campfires at sunset. Or perhaps it was the bright orange sign in the store and the comparatively lower price to the competitors. Grady, to most, was a kind-hearted person who had sadly never had the chance to be a mum yet. For, you see, there was one aspect of her romantic side that was, in a sense, quite odd. Her father was a blacksmith and tradesman, so Grady had been raised near many sharp tools and instruments. This made her tender personality even more appealing for all of the boys at school. But she was taught never to trust boys, no matter what they tried to do, and secretly carried a weapon capable of severely injuring anyone who dared to venture outside of the comfort zone. "If a boy gets too cute, they're going to get cut," her father had said. And unsurprisingly, she sliced open the squash packet with a large carving knife nearly a foot long, dumping its contents into a smooth glass jar filled with water. The mix dissipated into the water, and the plastic information card floated on the surface.
"Huh? What's this?"
Grady commented in an empty kitchen. She fished the card and read the tiny print to herself. "This is a very unique packet of super squash. You are invited to experience a special reward for your purchase. However, we insist that you keep this a secret. Do not be afraid of the sensation you feel. To continue, please hold your palm next to the pitcher. Sincerely, Simone Sloan." Grady thumbed the card, sliding it down next to the pitcher. She dipped a knife into the mix to blend the powder with water, wondering what this card could possibly mean. Just then, two eyes popped to the surface, the odd face of the pumpkin in milky contrast to the cherry red punch. Rather than being frightened by a creature in her beverage, Grady calmly, sweetly, lowered her nose to the edge of the pitcher and said, continuing to stir,
"Well, hello. What have we here?"
A tiny, watery squeak escaped, and a tentacle stretched to the lip of the pitcher as the plungee pulled itself, slinking up to the lip of the rounded glass. Grady backed away, shyly at first, smiling and eyes widening.
"You're so cute. You little... what are you?"
Another squeak escaped the pumpkin, and it climbed up to the edge, eyes motioning to Grady's palm, still holding the knife.
"What? You want to go for a ride? I'm not sure. You don't look dangerous."
Without warning, the translucent squid leapt to her open palm, landing with a plop and blinking once. Grady giggled, dropping the knife momentarily and extending the index finger to feel the slippery skin. She stroked the plungee, hearing a bubbly giggle and feeling it slink up her wrist.
"It's kind of ticklish. I like you, little guy. Or little girl."
She considered reaching for her camera, but instead leaned back into the countertop as the pumpkin continued to slide higher, across her shoulder. She shuddered at the sensation directly below her neck, a warm blush turning her neck as crimson as the pitcher in front of her. Her heart beat faster, and suddenly felt threatened by the thin, stringy tentacles stretching across her neck tensely. Grady's hand instinctively gripped the knife handle again. But just as soon, the tentacles retreated, tickling Grady's clavicle as they were resorbed into the plushie's body. She reached for her purse, unfolding a compact and staring at the iridescent oval now blinking back at her, nuzzling softly and spongily inside the indentation under her neck, and, letting out a chirpy squeak, began its tumbly trip down her chest and torso, extending a tentacle to cling to the elastic waistband of her panties. Grady shivered, then felt the cool, slippery skin dip inside. Again she reached for the knife, muttering to herself,
"What's happening?"
Only the plushie knew for sure, focused on his task, wiggling across the smooth surface of her pelvis and fully eclipsing the surface of Grady's clitoris with a snug smock sound. A soothing sigh of relief slipped from her lips, and she leaned forward, straightening her thighs, arching her back, and jutting her backside forth in a straddled pose. She panicked for a second as she had become increasingly aroused in such an immediate way, the thin, plucky strands of the tentacles beginning to emerge from the sides of her panties and stretch around her thighs. In no time, the puffkin had engorged her delicate petals with the spongy suction of its underbelly. She writhed, feeling the taut tensiles flipping over the surface of her legs. Plungies had nothing sharp to remove undergarments, but they were flexible enough to twist and bunch up fabric with their curled-up tentacles. And as they exposed Grady's mound to the cool kitchen air creeping underneath her skirt, she lifted up the fabric to see just what was taking place. Grady craned her neck and bit her lip.
"I feel so good, little guy. Can you hear me down there?"
she muttered, moaning to herself and straightening her back against the cabinets behind her.
"I know this is real. I don't know where you came from, but I'm so glad you're here."
She continued to moan, even as the tentacles continued to tighten, turning her thighs bright red and focusing the blood flow between her legs. It was at this moment that Grady began to feel slightly deranged about a newfound friend, who was building her impossibly to the brink of satisfaction. Would the tight, thin tentacles cause her to pass out or to fall over? It was so small, though, and so cute, and it came from the drink mix. So it wouldn't be too threatening, right? She liked the way it had focused on her clitoris. She didn't want it to stop until she was at her peak, but she didn't want the tentacles to threaten her. Quietly, between moans, Grady reached for her knife.
"One tentacle. I'll cut off one and see. Maybe what it tastes like, and maybe it'll stop clutching me so tightly."
She carefully inched the blade against her pelvis, took a deep breath, and sliced under the edge of the tentacle, tugging it free. As a defense mechanism, the puffkin clenched its remaining tentacles tighter and began sucking harder on the surface of Grady's clitoris, already slick and swollen from the exposure. A giggle escaped Grady's lips and she smiled, watching the tentacles squirm between her fingertips.
"Now let's see if you taste as good as the squash."
She slurped the succulent flesh like a strand of spaghetti, the delicate sucker spongy and sweet against her tongue and teeth. Grady moaned at the devilish sensation and instantly grabbed her knife, slicing away two more tense strands against her thighs, as well as the fabric of her panties. The bottom half of her body now completely exposed, she bent her knees and moaned, leaning back once more and scooting down the edge of the cabinet. Between mouthfuls of tentacle, Grady began to feel overwhelmed by the pressure building inside of her. But, with nowhere to go, the plungee was frozen in an intense cycle of instruction against her clit. All of the leftover oxygen escaped its body, and the sounds of Grady's pleasure soon drowned out the soft, airy slurps of the pink blob. Grady greedily lowered a hand into the head of the plungee, smushing the suction into a focused bundle of nerves right at the tip, and gyrated her hips to ride the waves of pleasure threatening to spill forth from her body.
"You're gonna make me come, little fella. I can't believe it,"
she exclaimed excitedly, nuzzling its body faster as she spread her legs open and fondled herself openly by the light of the sun through the kitchen window. She shut her eyes and let herself go in a monumental fashion, her legs trembling as the suction intensified against her pulsing skin. She smiled as the slickened head arose. The plungee had been trained to recognize when orgasm had occurred, so it blinked largely at Grady. In spite of the fact that it had been wounded and partially consumed, it still carried a look of happiness on its face, and it was blissfully unaware of its final living moments, where Grady's affection and gratitude momentarily stopped.
"I have to keep you a secret, little guy,"
She sighed breathlessly, plucking him from the surface of a clit by the squishy top of his head.
And your tentacles taste so good.
She eased her free hand down between her legs and patted her dampened, unpenetrated mound softly.
I bet the rest of you does too, huh?
With her front teeth, she snipped the plushie's body cleanly in half, smacking his gelatinous form against her lips and tasting the wetness burst inside of her mouth. She let out a post-coital moan, a soft yet sinister smirk slowly giving way to a suggestive chuckle. Chapter 3. Nancy Nottingham Bubbles with Excitement. Featuring the performer, Cuckoo Bananas. Nancy Nottingham was different. Much to the later chagrin of Simone, she was yet another person who was not purchasing Super Squash for the sake of a child. In fact, Nancy's claim to fame among her circle of friends were her elaborate and detailed dinner parties. She had planned one such party the night of her encounter with the Plungy, and her remaining obligations for the engagement were nearly insurmountable. Now, it bears repeating that her experience differed from everyone else because of the odd ingredient that hadn't been tested in the laboratory. Nancy had read an article several years prior about using flavored fizzy water to enhance the taste of drink mixes, and had routinely included it as part of a beverage assortment, alongside the traditional offerings one would see at these types of gatherings. By the time she had ripped the envelope open, she was verbally stringing together the litany of tasks she needed to finish before her guests would begin arriving. And she was stressed out. Too stressed, in fact, to notice the card Simone had left for her and four other lucky drink makers.
Quiches are cooling. Wine glasses are drying. Party games. Did I put out charades? Oh, I meant to invite Charles. I wonder if I can still reach him at the office,
she quizzically remarked to herself. Briskly, she stirred the mix into the tall, wide-mouthed pitcher and combined it with a large bottle of blackberry seltzer. Nancy had resounding success with the blackberry fizzle punch in the past, and yet had no idea what to expect with tonight's batch. Unlike Grady, Nancy was too distracted to notice the big, bright eyes of the Plungy emerge, blushing from the soupy, sugary liquid. She had turned her back on the pitcher to focus adding ingredients to her what-the-dilly-yo cucumber dill dip. She did, however, hear the gurgling fizz and jumped when the silence of their kitchen was broken by the dainty belch of the pumpkin, slinking its way up the edge of the wooden spoon. Nancy yelped, but was not panicked by its presence, until, unannounced, the Plungy skin suddenly grew taut over the top of the handle, growing with a shudder to almost 5 times its original size. Uncertain of its threat, Nancy commented to herself, and seemingly to the ambiguous creature.
How did you end up getting mixed into my punch?
She leaned in to take a closer look at the Plungy skin, glowing bright pink, almost shimmering because of the kitchen light. By this point, she hadn't seen the clear tentacles stretching down the surface of the spoon, absorbing more of the punch. However, she had noticed the creature continuing to grow in size. This, in truth, was an unintended consequence of the additional carbonation, which had created fluctuations in the Plungy's absorption rate. Soon it was as big as a champagne flute and stretched several inches, dipping back down into the punch. Nancy stared for a moment, panicked and unaware of the altered state the Plungy was in.
What am I supposed to do here?
She mumbled, fumbling for the packet she discarded in hopes she would find some explanation. In fact, she did, and she recited the urgent portions of Simone's information card.
Unique packet, Super Squash, special reward, secret. Put your palm next to the pitcher.
She glanced at a clock in the kitchen. Guests would be arriving in 1 hour's time, and her curious brain shifted a gaze back to the Plungy. It was a little charming in its quirky way.
Are you smiling at me, little fella?
She asked, before her impulses got the better of her, and she cautiously held her hand open to the edge of the spoon. As it had been trained, the Plungy hopped from the edge of the spoon into Nancy's palm. She giggled excitedly and felt her sticky, punch-stained hand wriggle as the growing tentacle sloshed over her wrist and up towards her elbow. The slippery globule inched to her wrist, but Nancy let out a teensy yelp, jerking her wrist down to her sides. Sensing a shortcut, the plungy now changed its focus to the knees below Nancy's party dress. By this point, its tentacle stretched slickly down to the floor, and Nancy was now frozen in place in the center of the kitchen.
I don't get it. Is this supposed to be happening?
She giggled, tickled by the subtle suction inching up her thighs. The puffkin blinked slowly, looking up at her. Then, in a quick, clever motion, dipped its head under the folds of her emerald skirt and pulled its way up between her legs. The sensation for Nancy was unexpected, of course, but as the warmth of her legs continued to radiate, drawing the fluctuated plungy ever closer, she relaxed, leaning her hands against the granite. In the distance, she heard her phone ring, but, paralyzed by her new visitor's motion against her smooth skin, she suddenly remembered an important step she had forgotten in getting ready.
I forgot to put on panties!
She exclaimed, just as the stretchy, spongy surface of the plungy reached her clitoris. A gentle bulge where the creature's torso had come to rest had outlined her dress, and she reached cautiously to pat the surface, beginning to feel the texture grind against her surprisingly sensitive and goosebumped skin. It was at this point that the carbonation consumed proved to be too much, and instead of the suction the plungy had been accustomed to delivering, a steady stream of built-up air began to trickle and blow across the surface of Nancy's clitoris. Focused on the very tip, then tracing down the glistened wetness of her slickened lips, she shuddered at the sensation and began to whimper softly. By this time, the tentacles now stretched across her backside and wrapped fully around the length of her waist. Tiny pustules pitter-pattered across her skin and underneath her dress. Nancy, too afraid to pry away the plungy's body, simply allowed the creature to continue, letting low moans escape her lips while she writhed away in delight. The stream of air suddenly stopped, and the plungy, unable to fixate its body against Nancy's clitoris, instead moved to bury itself between her legs. She trilled a bit as she felt her lips part, a flexible, living, perfectly fitting creature easing itself inside. She hadn't known the plungy was, at this point, nearly 10 times its size. And, according to how it was trained in the laboratory, it would only grow bigger inside of her. A stray tentacle reached to stretch around the top of her clit. Nancy moaned, feeling the tension building as the plungy wriggled its way to the back of her opening, keeping its body free for the most satisfying part to come.
Are you growing inside me?
She exclaimed, feeling the air inflating the creature inside of her and hearing the chirpy breathing of the puffkin while it continued to play with the clitoris. She reached between her legs, caressing the outside of its exposed body and sliding a finger underneath the tentacle to feel it throbbing against her skin. And slowly, the air pressure building up inside her, the thrust stimulated by the plungy by moving pockets of air between its slickened chambers, Nancy began to give in to her arousal. Her hand pressed against her engorged clitoris, which prompted the creature to grow even more. She strained and squealed, feeling it add pressure against her muscles, and responding by clenching the creature even further.
I can't help myself anymore,
she moaned, lowering to her knees and spreading her legs apart into a straddle. She glanced down at the floor, a tentacle dangling free, and slid it into her mouth, letting it suck her tongue back as she continued to feel it growing, pulsing inside of her. The thrust began to intensify, and she closed her eyes, the creature instinctively shifting its tense skin against hers. Suddenly, without warning, she felt the waves of her orgasm build to an apex and let her trembling legs sink down to the ground, her hand fixated against her clitoris. But as she came, she felt an unusual sensation. For the plunging, the pressure, carbonation, and the muscle contractions surrounding its body had proved to be too much. And, like a balloon popping, the body began to lose its form, the squishy membrane returning to gelatinous, then to liquid form. Suddenly, the puddle of satisfaction flooded the kitchen floor beneath Nancy's knees. It glistened a bit, shimmering in the sunshine, but worrying her a bit. She felt the tentacles around her lose their tension and drip in sticky strings down the surface of her backside, thighs, and pelvis. As the intense moment began to leave her, She looked down and saw the mess she and the now disintegrated creature had made, and felt her hips buckle down. Between satisfied breaths, she saw no evidence remaining of a special visitor. Had this been the intent the whole time? Confused, she stood up, a jumbled mess, and looked at her dress, now damp from the waist down.
Well, I guess I have to change and clean up now,
she said, happy and puzzled. There was still 30 minutes before the party, and it seemed unlikely anyone would ever believe her. So she made no mention of it to anyone until she contacted Simone the following week. But there were still 3 packets, 3 plungies to be discovered. Who would be next? Chapter 4, Wanda Witterer's Important Interview. Featuring the performers, listening always, and insert name here TBD. We turn now to another curious chapter of Simone's increasingly improbable story of bringing her super squash to the masses by introducing Wanda Witterer's experience with a curious plungy. Wanda, still in a bedroom robe, cleared her throat and sipped on a cup of lukewarm coffee while she reached for the pitcher to prepare the punch mix. She had a very important morning ahead of her. She had been scheduled for her final telephone interview with Gordon Jones, a local recruiter looking for processing specialists. Gordon dialed her promptly at 10 a.m., right as Wanda tore the packet of drink mix open and drizzled the contents into the empty pitcher, tossing the envelope and, once again, Simone's important note into the trash.
Good morning, Wanda,
Gordon announced heartily.
I appreciate you doing this via telephone. I just have a lot on my plate, and I only need a few minutes of your time to ask you some questions about your job history and make sure you're the right fit.
Wanda herself had been running behind as well, and had expected to join the conference call more prepared. She had read some of the job duties, but felt that she could fib her way through most of it. Gordon saw this meeting as a mere formality as well. He could tell Wanda was qualified just from her application. But he still insisted on getting a feel for the person he would soon award the contract to.
It's no problem at all, Mr. Jones,
Wanda replied.
I hope you don't mind. I'm taking this call in my kitchen. But I'm here, sitting at my desk, ready for your first question,
she said, fibbing a bit and dipping the spoon into the translucent red squash mixture. She could hear the rustling of papers on the other side, but she wasn't certain if Gordon was listening closely to her end of the conversation. So she was careful to keep a utensil from tapping the sides of the pitcher. She could be very quiet if she kept everything under control. Unfortunately, the plungy had begun to crawl up the side of the glass and was soon about to make itself known.
Now then, first question,
Gordon said, taking a sip of coffee.
This is primarily a data entry position, and sometimes the work can get to be tedious and dull. How would you describe your ability to overcome this challenge?
Wanda cleared her throat and answered in a most confident voice.
Well, with my previous job, I had plenty of opportunity for downtime, but I've always been a go-getter. Even in real life, I try to look for chances to multitask or get my work done faster. Sometimes I can help others with their work, too. I feel pretty capable of handling multiple project streams.
She giggled a bit at this last comment, for she had been silently wandering about her kitchen and waiting for a more challenging question. But she had not seen the plungy now inching across the hardwood tabletop, ever nearer to her wrist.
Very good.
Gordon was somewhat distracted by his own secret set of questions he could not ask Wanda. He believed he remembered her, in fact, from a university psychology course that they had taken together some time ago. But he could not be certain until, of course, it came up in conversation.
Okay, the next question. If you can, tell me about a time in your past where you had to convey an important message that would affect your career opportunities. How did you approach your leadership? What did you learn from the experience?
The innocent-minded Puffkin quickly hopped into the back of Wanda's hand, and she let out a small shriek, pulling her wrist close to her face and staring the slimy, squishy creature in its eyes before trying to shake it off, to no avail. Its tentacles had begun to stretch around her neck, but dangled its body loosely and moved to her shoulder blades. Gordon pulled the phone away for a second, unsure if it was a glitch in the connection, then asked,
Wanda, Is everything okay?
No, it was most certainly not, Wanda thought. But not wanting to draw attention to the strange squishy squid now inching its way over the silken patterned fabric of her robe, she squirmed a reply, managing...
Gordon, I'm so sorry. Could you please repeat the...
Gordon, puzzled, rephrased it, simplifying for the now distracted Wanda by saying...
Okay. Let's pretend you had something important you needed to tell me. What's your strongest asset when it comes to your communication skills?
Wanda quickly sat down at the desk and dared not move, feeling the plungy slickly slide underneath the hem of a garment, its tentacles twisting down her ribcage. She turned the speakerphone function on, silently shivered and fumbled towards an answer, as the tiny creature snaked its way down her pelvis.
I would have to say I remain very calm under pressure, and sometimes circumstances change, and I think I would tell the person, I would have to say it, kind of.
Satisfied by her answer, Gordon notched another check in the interview box, then subconsciously traced his pencil down to the education section. At the same exact moment, the pumpkin had squirmed its way between Wanda's thighs, which she splayed open, untying the robe and hovering her hand over the warm, wet blob now nudging at her clitoris. Gordon decided he couldn't skirt the issue any longer and decided to deal with his curiosity a little more directly.
Okay, and you got your degree in computer programming. Was that your favorite topic in school?
Wanda struggled to contain her panic, but miraculously something else happened. The plungy, squeaking and stretching its tentacles across her lap, nestled its suckers against her mound, slowly puckering atop her clitoris and running the bumpy surface of its skin over her warmth. She sighed and mumbled.
I think I took a psych course that I enjoyed.
Sensing his conversational entry point, but still oblivious to her predicament, he grinned to himself and said,
"Now that I think of it, we may have gone to the same school at the same time. Did you have Professor Stapleton?"
Meanwhile, as the suction intensified, Wanda desperately tried to hold both her moans and answer Gordon's question, while tugging at the tentacles.
I had Stapleton.
She whimpered wordlessly while Gordon reminisced about his experiences in school. But her actions seemed to irritate the plungy. Had Wanda bothered to read the included card, she would not have known she was not in danger. Instead, as the creature wriggled its way to provide her with satisfaction, it instinctively wrapped its strands around her wrists, binding her from interfering any further. Unfortunately, it meant she could not escape the clutches of the tiny creature between her legs. As her clit became more and more engorged, Gordon's enthusiasm was impossible to hide. He really thought she was enthralled that they shared the secret origin story, when in fact she was squirming and tugging in complete submission of the tiny yet strong plungy now inching across her mound.
"So, look, I know this is unprecedented."
Gordon folded the manila envelope containing her application. By this point, the plungy had tugged its way inside of Wanda's body, bending her wrists against her clit and enticing her to rub its swollen state into frenzied release. She continued to listen to Gordon, feeling the air inflate the pumpkin's body inside of her and simulating the thrust she hadn't prepared herself for. Gordon continued.
"I feel good about this. I'm prepared to offer you this role. Are you interested?"
Wanda replied.
"Yes."
"Great! Can you start Monday?"
Again, she replied, more breathlessly than before.
"Yes."
"Can you remember to bring 2 forms of ID and a canceled check to set up the direct deposit?"
"Yes."
The plungy's air-driven pulses filled her body with unbelievable satisfaction.
"And you're okay with a drug test afterwards?"
Yeah.
"Do you have any questions for me?"
She paused and panted a bit before answering, biting her lip.
"No."
"Well..."
Gordon stammered and gulped. It's now or never, he thought.
"Maybe before you start as an employee here, we could get coffee as friends?"
Yes,
Her moans were becoming impossible to mask, and she wished he would hang up so she wouldn't have to hold back any longer. Unfortunately, the waves of satisfaction came crashing for her as he proceeded to give her detailed directions to get to the office. As her grip clenched the squishy form, she could feel its tentacles suddenly sliding from her wrists, coiling deep inside of her now-soaked opening, then pushing deeper, sliding further than anything she had felt before. She gasped and felt a bundle of warmth radiating deep inside of her. The plunger very boldly and swiftly disappeared within her body. Although she felt momentarily sad it had to go, the fact that she had nailed the interview put a smile on her face. And Gordon could not corroborate anything Wanda reported to the company, and eventually to the authorities. But he was momentarily happy he found his new employee and also set up his coffee date, where fruit punch would surely not be on the menu. Chapter 5, Eunice Edwards' Sudden Silence, featuring the performer, Clumsy But Earnest. The next visit by our friend the Plungy took place 3 weeks to the day after the incident at Wanda Whittaker's house, and it was the one Simone was most nervous about being exposed to the public. For the subject in question, Eunice Edwards, tended to be a bit of a chatterbox, even when she was by herself. And whether or not she showed it, her mind was constantly going, hardly taking time between sentences for a breath. Eunice, in fact, had purchased extra packets of squash because the heat where she lived had become quite unbearable, and she wanted to restore some of the energy she was sweating away. Eunice was more active than many of the people in her city. She often jogged the neighborhood, in nothing more than a sports bra and her jogging shorts, and hummed along to her favorite artist, Bubbles McLeod. In fact, the day she came to discover Simone's secret, she had just returned from a 10-mile jaunt to the edge of town. Catching her breath as she stepped into her kitchen, she ran to fan her sweaty body off by standing in the path of her open freezer door. The vapor rose and enveloped her skin, before she grabbed a large plastic bag filled with ice, swinging it over to the counter in front of her drawer. Like the others, she chose to prepare her punch in a large pitcher. She stretched to lift the container from its high shelf, and placed it under the faucet, filling it up with cool water. She topped it off with 5 handfuls of ice, saving a stray piece to chew on before tossing the bag back into the freezer.
"I've been looking forward to you all morning,"
she said to the packet of punch. She ripped open the envelope and dumped the powdery, sweet-smelling dust into the pitcher. Her eyes didn't catch the shriveled pink dots that were a tad bigger than the rest of the punch mix. She did, however, see the card and read it aloud, giggling through much of it. After she had finished, her eyes traveled to the liquid, watching the stripes of color dissipate into the clear water.
"So, reward, huh?"
she pondered to herself, peering into the jug.
"Am I supposed to do something for it?"
Just then, 2 curious-looking eyes poked up from the liquid. Eunice giggled, gasping, slightly confused.
"What the heck is all this about?"
And then, quite unexpectedly, 2 more eyes popped up from the liquid. A mistake must have been made, for there were 2 plungies in a packet. However, Eunice was oblivious to this detail. She cocked her head to the side, giggling a little more and covering her mouth.
"Aw, you have a friend."
Not wanting to waste time, Eunice fished her hand inside and grabbed the ice cube one of the pumpkins had clutched on. She wondered aloud.
"I guess I have to find a home for you two, don't I? You can't live in my fruit punch anymore."
She felt the tentacles, tiny and tense, tickle her palm, and the chill of the ice cube melting her hand as the mini squid inched up her wrist. Meanwhile, Plungy number 2 was scooting its way up the spoon, bounding its way to race the other creature, perhaps following in its suckery footsteps by rote. Either way, Eunice was amused by the cuteness and happily held her other palm open. As the first Plungy got higher, creating a slimy, fruity trail up her arm, the second had chirped to the other. Both froze in place, and Eunice was left wondering what might happen next. She told Simone later that she believed she saw them nod to each other. Then, acrobatically, the second Plungy twisted a tentacle and dangled from her wrist down to her knee, tickling up her thighs, seeking a shortcut to the satisfaction. Before she could react, Eunice felt the tentacles curl around her neck, and the spongy body of the first plungy smoothly slide up her cheekbone. Still anticipating a cuddle, she felt the suckers purse against her lips, the tentacle flicking against her nostrils and sending the punchy scent upward.
"What are you two doing?"
Eunice said, puzzled. Before she could say anything more, the puffkin had stretched its body over her mouth and tightened its grip against her face, around the underside of her ears. Her nervous breaths, now muffled by the creature, pressed in a tight, awkward kiss. She shrieked as she felt the second slide its tentacles up around her hips, folding its body between the fabric of her shorts. She fumbled, rushing into the living room to look for her telephone, in case she had to call for an ambulance. But how would she speak, she wondered. What could she say? The soft puffkin wasted little time nestling into place over her clitoris, which was still warm from her exercise. But she was panicking a bit in her mind, and was struggling to breathe somewhat. As the plungy began its routine, Eunice relaxed a bit, relying on her nose to breathe and wondering if suffocation was part of the reward. But strangely, the silence of the room kind of lulled her into a calm trust, and her breathing got less erratic. She settled a bit, lying face up into the cushions of a couch. The presence of the plungies began to comfort her. Eunice had not felt threatened by their soft touch. While the suction of their skin against her most sensitive areas had been unfamiliar, she began to enjoy not having to speak all the time, and instead focused on her breaths. The sensation of warm, slippery air filling her mouth and blowing against her hardening clitoris actually began to relax her. And although the creature continued to smother her voice, she closed her eyes and felt the increased tension slipping and shifting against her pelvis. She lowered her fingers, guiding the warm, squeaky plungy against her clitoris and inching her hand under the strands of the squid's appendages, feeling the thin lines twist against the back of her knuckles. Her muffled moans began to punctuate, but her breathing remained stilted somewhat by plungy number one, which started to regulate her own breathing, holding it between the circular swirls that her hand had made between her mound. As the tension continued to build, she felt the plungy below slip lower, sliding its tiny smooth form down her lips, then slowly opening and wriggling its way inside of her. Eunice shuddered and let out a flustered squeak, muffled by the plungy, and continued to touch her clitoris as the satisfaction built towards a delightful crescendo. She felt the tentacle stretch around her wrist, guiding her hand from side to side as the spongy, air-filled creature pulsated and throbbed inside of her. Holding her breath certainly made her light-headed, to the point that she hadn't noticed the plungy starting to enter her mouth, stroking its body against her tongue. Eunice began to feel the waves of her orgasm building. She braced herself, letting the sensations rumble deep in her toes and shaking up her legs. A warmth flooded her belly and she inhaled sharply one final time, holding it until she could no longer bear it. Then finally, succumbing to the intensity. The plungy twisted and throbbed, the strands pulling at the surface of her skin as she gyrated against her hand, an amazing explosion of energy spilling forth from between her legs. She gasped for breath, coughing and sputtering forth with light-headed satisfaction. A giggle escaped her muffled mouth, momentarily forgetting the circumstances that led her to the couch in the first place. Then, quite suddenly, the plungy's Pavlovian obedience sent her into a frenzy. She felt the tentacles release their grip around her waist and pelvis, and the soft squishy body enter and squirm all the way inside of her. She gasped, leaving enough room for the other puffkin to slide down her throat. She momentarily gagged, before feeling the tentacles sink back into its body and swallowing its tiny form.
"Oh no,"
she said, panicked, finally able to take a normal breath. Her hand came to rest on the telephone, which had been buried in the couch cushions. She felt she needed to make a very important call. Chapter 6, Frances Fisher Feels Funny, featuring the performer, Mage Quitt. At the exact same time Eunice Edwards had activated the telephone and begun dialing, Francis Fisher had parked his bicycle in front of his flat, chaining it to the fence as he had done so for the past 4 years and 8 months. Francis was very comforted by all of the details he could keep in his head, and rarely made a mistake. He balanced his checkbook to the penny, disregarding the need for a ledger. He shunned the use of lists or reminders, instead relying on his memory to retain the information he needed to accomplish his goals. Sadly, Francis was returning home to a life alone. Although he had found love before, he was not certain he was cut out for it. Instead, he spent most of his free time moderating internet chat boards. It satisfied his need for control, as well as indulged his interests in more specific tastes. Francis carried his bag of groceries up the 17 stairs to his door, jiggling his keychain just so and unlocking it successfully on the first try, as he always did. Slipping off his shoes in the alcove, he knew he would have time to relax a bit before preparing his lunch, which he had meticulously purchased the ingredients for at the shop. He had also grabbed a packet of super squash, which he anticipated drinking 2 glasses of today and finishing off tomorrow. He unloaded the bag of groceries and put away his items in the cupboard, reviewing the steps he would follow. He used a measuring cup to accurately mix the beverage to the specifications on the package, always following the directions to their exact details. Francis, on this day, was not quiet. Ordinarily, when something did not turn out the way he expected, he typically responded with a quiet quip to himself, such as,
"Drat. Bugger."
Or,
"Oh me, oh my."
As he prepared to mix the squash, he soon remembered he had not finished the previous day's mix. There was still a glass's worth left of drink in the pitcher he intended to use.
"Oh, drat,"
Francis said to himself, lifting the jug from the top shelf of the fridge. The purple liquid sloshed around, and he began to ponder the steps involved in rectifying the situation. He would first have to pour the rest of the grape punch into a clean glass, then rinse and dry the pitcher and clean glass completely, allowing the temperature of the glass to return to normal before pouring the exact amount of water and ensuring all of the drink mix was dumped into the pitcher before stirring for 60 seconds. He also knew that he would have to chill the punch for at least 90 minutes before pouring the first glass to enjoy. Now, perhaps it was a strange twist of fate that at that moment, Francis reached for the packet of squash, holding his measuring cup over the pitcher. And so, for the first time in a long time, Francis took a deep breath, threw caution to the wind, and dumped the water into the pitcher.
"There, Francis, that wasn't so hard,"
he said to himself.
"Now, time for the mix."
He ripped open the envelope, scattering the contents over the top of the liquid and watching the dots of sugar and acid drip down into the lightly tinged, lavender-colored water. One blob sunk faster than the others, however, which caught his eye instantly. He dropped the envelope to the side and started to chase it, dipping his spoon into the liquid and scooping it up between stirs.
"What is that? What is that?"
Francis wondered aloud. The squishy, wide-eyed plungy squiggled around the concave surface of the spoon, absorbing the liquid into its body.
"A living creature inside my packet of punch. Bugger off, you."
Francis catapulted the puffkin towards the trash bin. The plungy, however, had a different idea. It had already curled a tentacle around the spoon and was not budging. He shook the spoon, panicking and muttering to himself. The creature didn't know who Francis was, or any of the other squash makers they were trained to satisfy. But their objective remained the same, regardless of who opened the packet. And so the creature inched its way to the edge of the spoon. And as Francis eyed the creature, adjusting his glasses to get a closer look, he felt the curl of a tentacle against his lips and groaned in discomfort. Francis didn't much care for physical contact, let alone the touch of a strange creature. He jumped a bit, feeling the suckers pull across his cheeks and the tiny weight of the plungy dangling under his skin. Through somewhat gritted teeth, Francis muttered,
"Oh, bugger,"
to himself, and felt the slimy strands spread down his neck, bundling up in the familiar barrel roll it would soon perform down his chest and toward his waistline. Rather than swat it away, Francis began to feel relaxed by the presence. Before he was completely under its spell, however, he sniffed the air sharply, detecting something he had only read about in history books. He lifted the packet to his nose, momentarily ignoring the tiny plungy inching its way across his torso. He couldn't know exactly what nerve agent was at play, but he could feel his guard lowered by something in the air. It smelled like fruit, but in fact was far more pungent. Could it be nerve gas? He wondered to himself. Some way to coerce me to not be so scared of this strange experience? It was about to get much stranger for Francis, indeed. The plunger had begun to inch inside his waistband, discovering something other than the female body parts it had been accustomed to. It was revealed later that the lab had considered many different contingencies, but all of the test subjects had defied laboratory explanation. Perhaps the most obvious miscalculation Simone had made was that both men and women make squash for their children, and although Francis could not be certain what he was in store for, the creature was unprepared for its own surprise. As the squishy pumpkin glazed down the veiny surface of Francis's shaft, it squeaked a bit. It had never felt such a curious clitoris before. It was quite long, and was not as hard as anticipated. Francis shivered as the tentacles wrapped below his legs. And another squeak, as the plungy felt the spiky wrinkles of Francis's scrotum tucked underneath his shaft. Francis let out a sigh, unusually relaxed. His tension melted away as the plungy, somewhat confused by the circumstances, slid its spherical, spongy body over the glands and against the slit. The pulses of Francis's heartbeat radiated much more intensely than the tiny creature had expected. Its pale pink skin stretched against the fabric of Francis's underwear, attempting to smother the entire tip with its body. It struggled and trembled, inflating itself a bit and settling completely over the head, sending shivers up Francis's body.
Are you trying to make me feel good, little guy?
He quietly decided in his head at that very moment, and with a pitcher full of Simone Sloane's punch, that he would let his guard down much more often in the future. He lowered his hands and unbuckled his belt, sliding his fingers against his pelvis and feeling his body rising and reacting to the creature's increased tension. His hand slid around his pulsing stiffness, and he slid his fingers around the bulge. A damp spot had formed where the underwear squished against the plungy, and the suction's intensity caused Francis to moan lowly, gripping himself and feeling the tentacles begin to wrap around his wrist. He knew from his experience that he could accomplish orgasm with less than 200 strokes of his hand. But this creature, with its added tension against his already throbbing shaft, was making it very difficult to keep from releasing. His hand shifted smoothly back and forth, each stroke supplemented by the slippery flesh of the plungy. He moaned surprisingly, leaning backwards against the kitchen counter and tilting his head. In no time flat, the head of his shaft had been completely enveloped, a pink tip overlaid atop his fully erect member. And the sensation was unlike Francis had felt in ages. Although the plungy was more acclimated to the female anatomy, the tightness of the suction and the gentle wriggles on the underside of his erection was proving to be too much to handle. He increased his tempo, moaning and clenching his body, his guard completely down at this point. The creature squeaked, feeling the arousal trickling out of the tip, and reacted by slickly secreting its own sticky liquid against the tip. It slid down in droplets into the grip of Francis, who had begun to tremble and grow numb. His body had started to feel the convulsions of his powerful orgasm take over. The plungy had not anticipated being inflated by the volume of cum being released at the moment of climax. Its body suddenly flooded with the dripping load. It squirmed its way off of Francis, who was tugging hard at the base throughout his stunned pulses.
I can't believe it,
he gasped, staring at the miraculous circumstances and his very satisfied results. The tentacles, still tight by this point, had stretched under his legs and around his waist, tense against his buttocks. In fact, even the plungy had not determined his job was complete. There was still the disappearing act to follow. And so, while Francis continued to catch his breath, the creature scooted its body underneath the shaft, against his balls, and slid between his legs, up several inches to the space between his buttocks, and squirmed its way inside Francis. He gasped, feeling his orgasm dribbling out of his body quite unusually, and felt the tiny tentacle sliding inside of him. All at once, both the creature and the intensity had vanished. His puzzled look finally drove him to retrieve the packet, where he discovered Simone's note, then turn the envelope over to discover the telephone number of Sloane Suites and report back what had happened. In fact, each of the five cases had reached Simone eventually to report something unusual they discovered. And although she assured them that their experience was a secret and would not be shared with anyone, she had her evidence. Sucker Punch, as it would become known, soon made its way to all corners of the world, and the much-publicized experience brought unprecedented success to the company. Simone and the Sloan family were successful again, and she soon had enough riches to continue in her heritage of exploring the sea. Of course, she made sure to pack plenty of punch for her trip.